Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jax weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big golf show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. Sunny and warm, very much getting much warmer by the day, and I think the summer weather is about to hit us. The hottest of the hot weather still to come. We still haven't really hit those big temperatures yet, but the city is certainly enjoying the red-hot Dodgers baseball. Maybe a little cooler of late with some pretty sloppy series, but still, I mean, a team that's 30 games over 500, and you know, with a couple bounces here or there this coming week, they could be 35 games over 500. It's certainly an incredible year for their regular season, so... We'll see if they have any trades coming up at the deadline. We may do a MLB trade deadline show with Ari and Jerry. We're already talking about doing another program. But tonight, we're going to focus on golf, and we'll talk about what turned out to be a dominant performance by Shane Lowry, who just cruised his way to the Open Championship in front of his fans in his homeland of Ireland, he being Irish, and the tournament taking place in Northern Ireland at Royal Portrush. But since Northern Ireland is next to regular Ireland, I mean, the many people from the entirety of Ireland were in attendance to root on their fellow countrymen to the victory. And he really did. He was very good on this day and throughout the entire tournament. He finished at 15 strokes under par. Really good. Not really any major competition on that final round. The closest one to him was Tommy Fleetwood, who finished at 9 under, but... He was never really that close. He did have some opportunity to cut into, I don't know, what was at one point a 4-stroke lead and a 5-stroke lead, but never really materialized for Fleetwood. And the rest of the field was just completely blown away by the 10th hole of that final round. So it was really Shane Lowry's weekend, and he really had been in the lead or near the lead for quite a bit of this tournament. So overall, a pretty good tournament, and now we can break it all down with our golf crew. And that would be Mike in North Jersey and John in Connecticut. We'll introduce them one by one. We start with John. Welcome back to the show, John. How's it going tonight?
Pretty good, Dave. Thanks for having us back on. Another major season down. Feels kind of weird to say that after the British Open, or Open Championship, rather. But, yeah, great to be back on the show. And the final major of the decade, too. And I can't remember. Did we start in 2010 or 2011? I don't remember if we've been on for the entire decade, but it's got to be close.
It's pretty close. It was 2011 when we started, and I think we did the Masters one, and so we did them all, but our first year was 2011. Yeah. Long time. Isn't that something? We've been doing 9 years worth of majors coverage. That's pretty cool. That's quite a run. So, yeah. All right, let's say hello to Mike in North Jersey, and John, thanks for joining us all that time. Same to you, Mike. Good to have you with us. How's it going tonight?
Well, I've had an up and down, David. So I discovered on my DraftKings Sportsbook app that, I mean, I've known about this, but I had never indulged in it. You can, obviously there are casino games you can play, and I've talked to you guys about that. But they also have a live dealer option. So finally today, I went into the whole live dealer thing, and it's pretty cool. It's like I was playing roulette, and you go in, and a video pops up, and it's an actual table with an actual person, you know, spinning the ball around. So, of course, I proceeded to lose $50 pretty quickly.
Oh,
and,
no.
Yeah. And I noticed that every dealer is a woman, too. I guess their audience is male, and they seem to hire attractive women. So not a bad marketing strategy by DraftKings. But I did make 25 back, so hopefully my luck continues.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you got to recover some of that. So, you know, it's always games, you can really, you know, when it comes to table-type games, you really can be crazy. So Good luck with the rest of the way. Now, how do you get the? Is it via video then? Because I'm like, wouldn't it? I thought assumed it would be computer generated, but like they'd just be dealing on the other end, like with actual stuff. But it's actually you can see them like on video, yeah.
Yeah, you see a live dealer on a video. The board, of course, is virtual, so you know you move your chips where you want them on a virtual board. But yeah, you get a video of the dealer and like an actual roulette wheel, and they actually spin a ball and you see it happen. So yeah, it's a virtual casino basically.
Wow, look at that. We're really getting into some sci-fi stuff here. It's pretty good. Okay, so back to golf for the hour. We will probably have some time left over to talk about some other stuff too, because I think maybe some college football points or whatever, but we'll see where the time takes us. But for now, let's go talk about the Open. And yeah, it was a very impressive show by Lowry, and the keys to it, I think we'll have the crew break that down. But Mike, I'll start with you. I mean, what did Shane Lowry do that made him so razor sharp on this day? And now I'll ask this follow up. Do you think that the crowd fueled him? I think it would seem logical that it did, because they were really behind him. And it was really great to see them respond at the end when he claimed the victory.
Yeah, well, he did a little bit of everything. If you look at all his rounds, they were a bit uneven with his stats. There were a couple rounds he drove the ball very well. There were a couple rounds he was very good at hitting greens in regulation. And then there were a couple of rounds where around the green and on the green he was pretty good. Shane Lowry has always struck me as being, like, I'm not surprised he won a major, even though if you look at his results for his career, you'd kind of be like, well, I don't know. He just has this bulldog mentality about him. You feel that he can get himself up for big events. He might be a little bit inconsistent, but when he plays well, he can play really well. I do think the event being in Northern Ireland, and of course, Shane Lowry's from the Republic of Ireland, and you know, there was this whole political division there, but it's on the same island. There is a bit, especially now with his generation, McIlroy's generation, there is a bit of a shared identity now, more so than there was in the past. At least that's my understanding of how things are over there. So I do think that Lowry was more pumped up for this event, maybe a little bit more focused. Now, sometimes that extra bit of energy can go both ways. In his case, I think it definitely helped him. So I do think the crowd did spur him on, but I think, you know, he really wanted to win this event. He did win an event on Portrush. Granted, the course was a little bit different back then. A couple holes got changed as an amateur. But going back to what I said about this guy being a bulldog, you know, the first time Lowry really burst on the scene over here was he was this unknown player, and he gets matched up with Rory McIlroy in the old one-and-done knockout format where they had with the World Match Play when it was in Arizona on that, like, desert mountain course. And I remember, like, actually talking about it with you guys and being like, you know, you might want to watch out for this guy because he knows McIlroy really well. They grew up playing golf together. And if McIlroy didn't get on him early, he wasn't going to feel nervous. McIlroy at the time was number one ranked player in the world. And Lowry beat him that day, and he got to the quarterfinals, I think. Before then, now, I'll even admit, this wasn't on my radar until I started looking at Lowry before that matchup. He won the Irish Open, a European Tour event, as an amateur golfer. So, I mean, really, to win on the European Tour as an amateur really is an incredible accomplishment, and in his homeland, no less. So, again, more of that instance of him being a bulldog. And, you know, he had that his biggest win before this was the WGC Bridgestone 2015. And then he had that 4-stroke lead at the U.S. Open, and he didn't play well in 2016 at Oakmont. And ever since then, he kind of had been like he had missed, I think, 3 or 4 cuts in a row at the Open going into this. So he hadn't really been his career had kind of stalled out after that win. I think not getting on the Ryder Cup team the next year in 2016, there was some like provision, because you know how the point systems can be weird, where that didn't gain him any Ryder Cup points. So he missed out on the 2016 Ryder Cup team. He blew the lead at the U.S. Open that year. And ever since then, he'd kind of been like, I don't know, just plodding along. But he showed this week what he can do. One thing I noticed that he did specifically was he seemed to have this go-to drive, like this just hold-off fade, where he kept it low, kept it out of the wind. I mean, granted, there wasn't much wind the first 3 days, but there's still some. So he's just able to control his ball flight. I think the added emotion of this event being in Northern Ireland helped him. And, you know, he's just a guy who, even if his overall body of work hasn't been great, you know, he's someone I think that we all could have seen performing well and, you know, maybe getting a major. And he was able to do that. So great job by him.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you alluded to a very good point that when you play in your home country or in your hometown or your homeland, wherever it is, it's a great opportunity and you get great support. But it also comes with added pressure. And I think you can make that point that maybe some of that pressure got to Rory McIlroy too. There's also Graham McDowell, also from Ireland, in the mix. But Lowry took the bull by the horns and took the pressure and rode it. And I thought it was pretty cool. So overall, a lot of fun to watch. So let's go to John and let's get your thoughts on Lowry's weekend.
Yeah, I agree overall with many of the things that Mike said. You know, he's a guy who, when I almost clicked his name for the FanDuel lineup, and I was regretting that decision. I was comparing the course history, or Open Championship history, rather, and Mike mentioned it. He missed like three or four cuts in a row. And even though his recent form had been pretty good, he finished third in the PGA Championship earlier this year. He had another high finish at the Canadian Open. I know it's a regular tour event, but he was starting to get the form that you saw a few years ago when he won that World Golf Championship and then contended at the U.S. Open the next year. And then, you know, like Mike said, he kind of fell off for a couple of years and now is starting to regain that form. I just didn't think, you know, maybe for whatever reason, he just was struggling to play the conditions at the Open. But that certainly changed this week. I mean, just very, very impressive overall. And the one salient point Paul Azinger made all week, and Mike just mentioned it, it's what my old golf pro used to call like an emergency tournament swing, where, okay, like he knew he was going to eliminate the left side of the course and just play that super low fade. It might not get him a ton of distance, but the ball was going to be in play, because at that point on Sunday, with the conditions that were so bad, the only way he was going to lose that tournament is if he shot like a 7 or 8 over. Oh, thank God he wasn't playing with J.B. Holmes. That might have rubbed off on him. You know, that he had an 87, which is just unfathomable to think about as a professional golfer. But in any event, the only way he was going to lose was if he was going to shoot like a 78 or a 79, because the way the conditions were, nobody from the chasing pack was going to go very, very low. And I guess you could say Fleetwood could have gone 3 under, I guess, but really, no. All the good scores that you saw on Sunday were very early in the day before the weather came in. So, you know, he knew what he had to do on Sunday, and he executed it perfectly. He made a couple bogeys like everyone else did on the course, but sprinkled in a few birdies too. And you know, was just very in control of his game and really all week. And you kind of he's a really good front runner, as you've seen. You saw this week. I believe at the WGC event, he pretty much led the whole way. I'd have to check his other wins, but I just remember him just being out in front and just playing with the lead. And, you know, he just in that situation, he was very impressive. So I agree. You could definitely see he has ability, and it just, he kind of gets up for the big tournaments. And, you know, when he has when his game is on, he can compete with the best players in the world, obviously. You know, going forward in his career, I mean, I could see him winning another major. I guess it's kind of the, if we compare like the last two major winners, Gary Woodland and Shane Lowry, and you said, who do you think has a better chance of winning another major? I would definitely say Shane Lowry for sure. And we'll see where this takes him. But overall, very impressive. I mean, the round on Saturday is really what won it for him. I mean, 8 under par and just played flawless golf. And it gave him that big enough cushion where, but you know, he knew the weather was coming in and could just kind of play that safe, conservative golf and just really not lose the tournament. So a great win for him and his kind of pseudo home country. Obviously, you guys mentioned, you know, it's on the same island. I mean, Northern Ireland and Ireland aren't the same country per se, but he definitely had a lot of support, and it you could tell it helped him for sure. And he just seems like an overall just genuinely good guy, and he's going to go down with his buddies to celebrate at his home course like 3 hours down the road. So I did see, I think he was in the field this week in Memphis. I don't know if he's withdrawn yet, but I don't think he's going to have quite a good week at in Memphis this week at the World Golf Championship. But you know what? He probably does not care at all. So good for him, and you know, a very impressive performance.
Yeah, that was a great story. I was really having a lot of fun soaking that all in. And Saturday's round, like you said, really, really good. I mean, he was really, he was sharp. So let's talk about some of the other guys in the field. We talked about how it was a 10 golfer race for the early parts of the tournament, but by Sunday, it really was just about Shane Lowry, and it was really interesting to see. So Mike, let's give it to you and give some thoughts on the rest of the leaderboard, at least the guys at the top for the moment.
I guess we'll start with Brooks Koepka, who I guess we can say capped off a historic year. I did hear something was on the Sirius PGA Tour channel that so he finished second, first, second, and fourth in major championships this year, and I believe he's the he's the fourth person in the modern era of golf to do that. The modern era, of course, being the when the Masters was established in 33 or 34. So the others to do it were Nicklaus did it once in the 70s. Tiger Woods did it not in 2001. He did it in 2005, I think it was. Jordan Spieth did it in 2015, and then Koepka, of course, did it this year. Now, we know that Koepka came out and bogeyed the first four holes on Sunday, but let's be honest, he was realistically out of the tournament anyway. I think really where Koepka got held back a little bit was, you know, the first round he played pretty well, shot a 68, but the second round he came out, he had good conditions, and he was only able to shoot a 200 par 69. And if you look at like the first five holes, he played them at even par, or even the first eight holes he played at even par in that second round. And really, you could get the course in the first eight holes. After that, it started to get tougher, but the first eight holes definitely were playing pretty easy, and he didn't take advantage of that on Friday. And that kind of put him behind the eight ball a little bit. So he, you know, another major win, we would have talked about this as one of the all-time historically great years in golf. So it's not quite that. If you want to go back to his U.S. Open and just go the U.S. Open last year through the U.S. Open this year, it is like a historically dominant stretch. It would have been nice for him to have won multiple majors in a row. He wasn't able to win any back-to-back. So it dims it a little bit, but still an incredible year. Second, first, second, fourth. What else can you say? Other guys high up. Tommy Fleetwood, we got to talk about him because he actually had a chance early on, I think, to put some pressure on the Lowry. And then he had a chance a little bit in the, I mean, he was kind of too far back, but when Lowry started to leak oil a little bit in that fourth round, Fleetwood had a chance. But early on, he was missing a lot of putts, and he didn't put the pressure on when he needed to. And Lowry was able to get out to more of a lead. So I know that Tommy Fleetwood had kind of been, we've kind of anointed him as being like a guy who was about, he's going to win a major championship, but he hasn't won. I know he's got a couple second places in majors, but he hasn't won a tournament now in a while. Like you got to go back to the beginning of last year, I believe. So we got to see Tommy Fleetwood kind of come back to form a little bit. Maybe it's a little bit of a learning experience for him, but like John said earlier, it would have been very difficult. Short of Lowry blowing up, even if Fleetwood had played well, it would have been tough for him to catch. But still, he could have played better, and he should have been a few scores better. Lee Westwood was in the mix. No one expected him to win, I don't think. You know, a good result for him. I think this gets him into the Masters the following year. In fact, it definitely does. So good for him, able to get himself a few more opportunities to play. Francesco Molinari had the round of the day on Sunday. He shot 66. So an 11th place finish in his defense of the Open Championship. Ricky Fowler finished in 6th place but had no chance to win. So, I mean, what else is new for Ricky? I mean, that's almost what you expect at this point. You know, he does something where, like, you can look at the record and say, well, you know, he had some good results, but he wasn't really in it. So I'm sure the 6th place finish, we'll see lots of articles before the Masters next year saying, well, you know, this is going to be when Ricky Fowler breaks out. Now, granted, I will say this. We're finally starting to see that narrative get backed off a little bit. But, I mean, it's about 10 years too late with that happening. Anyways, oh, yeah. Bob McIntyre, who I've legitimately never heard of, also finished in a tie for 6th place. And there was a bit of a dispute because he was playing with Kyle Stanley. And Kyle Stanley hit a ball way offline. It went into the crowd and hit McIntyre's caddy's mother in the head. And then he said after the round, like, why the hell didn't you yell four? And then Stanley came back and said, I've been on the tour for X number of years. Don't lecture me about how to play golf. So interesting little side note there with Bob McIntyre. Maybe we'll see more of Bob McIntyre, because I know the last time we mocked a no-name guy for having a good finish, he's Xander Schauffele, and he's one of the better players in the world now. So maybe we'll be seeing a similar trajectory for Mr. McIntyre.
That'll be interesting. So I guess I can infer from that he's still pretty young.
Yeah, he's like 21 or 22.
Oh, okay, yeah. All right, so John, let's talk about the tops of the leaderboard. What did you see from the weekend?
Well, first I'll add there was another person who finished top five in all four majors that Mike didn't mention. Who could forget Ricky Fowler in 2014 accomplished the feat, and of course he did it without a victory. He finished top five in all four majors. So that's just another stat on his resume that he it was a close but no cigar scenario for him. I do remember that year. He played really well, but just couldn't get it done. So top five for him in all four majors as well. But, yeah, I mean, you know, there's not much to say about the top of the leaderboard. I mean, I completely agree with Fleetwood had a chance early in the round to really put some pressure on Lowry. He just couldn't do it. He was just even par through the first seven or eight holes, really nothing going. And then he had another chance after Lowry had made some bogeys. I believe he got to within three shots, I want to say, on the 15th or 14th, and he just took a double bogey, and that just completely killed his chances. And, you know, we'll get to the broadcast in a minute, but, like, Azinger is killing the guy. Oh, why is he trying to hit, you know, go for the green from that bunker? I mean, it was only a 130-yard shot, and the lip of the bunker wasn't right up against it. I mean, he had room. He just hit a really poor shot. A professional golfer hitting a wedge out of a bunker, he should be able to get that on the green. I didn't think that was a bad decision at all. He had to make something happen. And at that point, yeah, okay, you want to make a par, but you got to take a chance in that situation when you're down three shots, in my opinion. I thought that was really as good as his analysis was about Lowry's swing. That was just I completely disagreed with that analysis at that point of the tournament. And he had to make something happen. But it was a good finish for Fleetwood. You know, we'll see if he can break through here for a major eventually. He seems to be up there, but like Mike said, he hasn't really won in a while, and kind of the trajectory for these kind of things are you win at other events before you win majors, but we'll see about him. Tony Finau, very quiet third place. Really didn't see many of his shots. I don't know why. I mean, whatever. Again, another guy, I think he has one win on tour. It's like the Puerto Rico Open or something. And just a lot of ability, but he just hasn't gotten done in the gotten it done in the big tournaments, but a good finish for him here. Third place is pretty well done, and even par on Sunday, that's a pretty nice round. As far as Koepka goes, yeah, he really wasn't going to win, especially with the weather forecast. I mean, if it was a day like Saturday where you could go 7 or 8 under, I would have given him a chance, but he just, even if he had parred the first four holes, he was never getting to 15 under or 14 under where he needed to be to really challenge Lowry. And I honestly think playing with J.B. Holmes hurt him, because Holmes is notoriously one of the slowest players on tour. And you add in the wind and the rain and the fact that he was just playing miserably. I mean, you know, he can say all he wants that it didn't affect him, but you can tell it was like his living hell trying to play that round with Holmes. And, you know, that I think that definitely affected him for the final round anyway. But like I said, I think he was just too far back to win. But certainly another top five finish for him, and caps off a hell of a major year. You really can say that, you know, he could have won three majors. You know, take Gary Woodland out of the equation. He wins the U.S. Open. He doesn't put the ball in the water on the 12th hole at Augusta. He probably wins there. So he could have had three majors this year. And, you know, he certainly brings his game, his A game, to these tournaments. You can tell he just really doesn't practice that much for the regular tour events, or doesn't put as much mental energy or whatever into it. And he certainly brings his best game to the majors. It's what you want to see. It's like what Faldo did. That's what all these great golfers do. They save their energy and brought their did all their practice for the majors. So good job out of him. We'll see what happens as he prepares for Augusta next year. That's really the next time we'll probably see him in contention. I don't know if he'll do much in the FedEx Cup, even though he moved to number one in the standings. So we'll see what happens there next month. But yeah, that's really the only top of the leaderboard that I guess we should mention. The Englishman did well. Westwood, Hatton, and Willett all finished in the top 10. So good job out of them. And, of course, Ricky Fowler with the backdoor top 10, or wasn't really backdoor top 10 because he started the day kind of up there, but he hung on for sixth place. So good job out of Ricky, I guess.
All right. So now let's get into the course, the beautiful facility of Royal Portrush. I did think that it was a very nice setting for this tournament. The first time that they've hosted the Open in over 50 years, nearly 60 years. And, you know, the reasons were outlined by Mike in our last podcast, where he was breaking down the political turmoil and the religious turmoil that was going on. Very violent times in Northern Ireland throughout a lot of the 20th century. But as things, tensions have cooled down, at least to our knowledge, the opening came for this place, this beautiful place, to host the Open Championship, and they did a good job, I thought. So, Mike, let's get some more thoughts. What were your takeaways from the course?
It really was a tremendous course. It's definitely, if it's not the best in the current Rota, it's definitely up there. excuse me. One thing I did notice about it was, it's a little bit different than the majority of your links courses. Like there's not so many like pot bunkers, you know, bunkers. Well, I mean, it depends on your definition of a pot bunker. They do have pot bunkers, but I mean like the circular bunkers that instead of having the sand flashed up, that they have the, like it kind of looks like the sod, like the layered sod as the walls, and they just go straight up. So you don't really see that. It's not tight, but on a lot of these links courses, you can like blow the ball way right or left, and you know, you'll still be in like short grass or something, assuming you don't like hit it into a bush or like a patch of fescue. But really, with Royal Portrush, you know, I said you don't have the sideline pot bunkers, and a lot of the holes, you know, it's really it is a bit of a demanding course off the tee. You know, you have to shape shots a certain way. If you look at the field averages, like the fairways and regulation percentage for the field over the championship was only 50 something percent. So in that way, it's a little bit odd for a links course. It basically cuts through the dunes. And you normally have like high grass covered dunes to the left and right of you. and the holes kind of run through that. I'll say that the fifth hole I thought was just, you know, it's a little bit quirky with that out of bounds over the hole, but, you know, just the setting of that going downhill towards the sea, that was pretty nice. So, you know, it's really nice that they came back here. I would say that a criticism you could make of a lot of open championship venues is they can be a little bit quirky. And, you know, I know some golf architecture aficionados will say, well, that's the charm. Yeah, but, you know, I feel like this presents a really, really fair challenge. You know, you don't get like a bad bounce to get screwed. Now, that being said, the one thing that was a little odd on this course is that they had this like very, very, very tight out of bounds marks on one. And obviously we saw that get Rory McIlroy, we saw it get Ricky Fowler. And it just seems a little bit odd because like, it's not up against a property or anything. It's just like a random stake marked out onto the fairway. And like, I mean, not the fairway, a little bit into the rough. And it's like, well, if you're left of this like arbitrary point, you're out of bounds. So that was a little bit weird, but definitely a much, much welcomed addition. Or I don't know if I guess we can call it an addition because it was out of the Rota for all intents and purposes, not having hosted a Open since 1951. So a great addition, a top level course. And the rumor is now that they're going to go back there in 2024. It's either going to be at Portrush again or at Royal Lytham and St. Anne's, but who knows what's actually going on behind closed doors, but from the stuff I'm reading, I would say I put my money on Portrush. So we might be making a quick turnaround back to Northern Ireland for the Open Championship.
It would seem like an awkward transition to have it that soon, but I don't think anyone would complain because it is, like you said, a wonderful venue. Now, if I saw correctly, Mike, just to follow up on the out of bounds comment, more people went out of bounds during this tournament than during basically the rest of the tour. That's quite a bit. So, yeah, right, it's kind of tight.
Yeah, now that you mention that, I definitely heard that too. Oh, yeah, and just one thing, because John mentioned it, the Fowler top five stat. Now that I remember correctly, the stat was definitely a win and a top five in every major. So, I just said top five, so Fowler would have qualified for that. But it was definitely a win in top five that they were mentioning.
All right, interesting. So let's go to John. Let's see if there anything as far as the course at Royal Portrush.
Yeah, really nothing else to add. It was a beautiful course. I did not get to watch as much of it as I would have liked on Thursday and Friday. I did barely watch any of it, but certainly watched it all on Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, the first thing I was going to mention was like all the out of bounds that you guys talked about. It just seemed like every hole it was just so tight. And then if you were off just a little bit, I mean, you were out of bounds. You know, you guys mentioned on one and then behind the green on the fifth hole, and that definitely adds an element of strategy. When you have to be that precise with your shots, you have to think about it. Oh man, like if I hit that hill, you know, I'm going to go out of bounds and lose the ball. So that was definitely a quirk that you really don't see compared to a lot of links courses. You know, it was just your typical links course in that you had to be accurate. You had to hit the fairway, hit the green. And like anything, the main defense for these courses is the weather, the wind and the rain. And, you know, obviously there are a few courses in the rotation that are tougher than others, like Carnoustie comes to mind. I forget the one that Padraig Harrington won at. Everyone was like four or five over there. Maybe it was Birkdale. I'm not exactly sure. I'll have to look that up. But that one's pretty tough. I remember it being like a sunny, but there was no like rain. It was basically just a hard course when he won. Everyone was over par. But for the most part, these links courses, their main defense is the wind and the rain. And you saw that again on Sunday when it really showed its teeth. But and on Thursday as well, there was some pretty high scores. I'm sure we'll get to some of those players in a little bit. But it was a gorgeous course, and I hope they do come back in 2024. You know, they seem to get St. Andrews at every 5 years. They might as well start a new tradition with Royal Portrush. So I'm all for that. And you know, you know, we'll look forward to having another open at Port Rush. So it was a great venue, and I think the people of Northern Ireland can certainly be proud to have hosted the championship.
Yeah, no question about it. It was a really good event. Well done. Well hosted. So now it is time for surprises and disappointments, and it will be about that time to run down those players that John alluded to. So, John, we'll start with you first. I think I know the winner of the disappointments category this year from the Open. So let's give it to you now for your picks.
Oh, you do, Dave? Who am I going to say is my biggest disappointment?
Got to be J.B. Holmes, right, with 87?
Well, I mean, if you had told me, honestly, if I had saw that, you know, when I see that storm coming in, if you told me he would shoot 87, I would not be 100% surprised that he would shoot 87 in that. But, that's still pretty bad. But, no, my biggest disappointment for the week is Adam Scott. He was playing such good golf coming into this. And you'd figure a course where, ball striking is at a premium, that you have to hit the fairways and the greens and stay out of trouble. And the one thing about links courses is that the greens they don't have a ton of, undulation they have slopes, but it's not like they're not that fast because they have to keep it relatively calm because of the weather conditions. I mean, if you get 40-mile-an-hour winds, you're not going to have a greens rolling like they do at the Masters. So they have to keep them relatively slow compared to the other majors. So with slower greens, with not that much undulation, his putting really wouldn't be a problem, and he just played horrible. I think he had a 78 on day one. It was just awful and just completely killed my chances of being the FanDuel champion for the year in our group. Just horrible, horrible performance out of him. So that was my biggest surprise because he was playing well coming in almost every event, and he had a nice string of top 25s. That really surprised me. Rory McIlroy, let's get to him. Now, I think there is something to be said about there was just too much pressure on him. He wanted to do so well for his home country, and it just got to him. I think there's really no other way to explain it because he was so bad on day one. And, you know, I'll give him credit for coming out there and shooting a low round and to try to make the cut. But again, we've criticized people praising Tiger Woods and other golfers for, because every single week there's someone that shoots horrible in round one and has a great round two with no pressure to almost make the cut or make the cut. Same kind of thing on a Sunday when they're outside the top 20 or 30 and they shoot a no pressure 6 or 7 under to get in the top 10. Same kind of thing. So I'm not going to give him a ton of credit, obviously, because he still made the cut. I mean, it was a nice round and he sure gave everyone a thrill. You would expect him to come out and at least, really try hard the next day. So just a very disappointing event for him. And here we are now, 5 years after his last major win, still with no majors. And, yeah, he did win the Players this year. But overall, I'd have to say Rory had a very disappointing season for the kind of talent that he has. Dustin Johnson, there's something going on with him. I think he's either fired his swing coach or there's something going on with his swing coach, I read, and he had a horrible – I wouldn't say a horrible tournament. I mean, he made the cut, but he finished tied for 50th, never contended at all. So just a bad tournament for him, and he kind of had a slow finish of the season after starting off pretty well. Let's see, who else here? I thought Patrick Cantlay would have done a little better. No, he really didn't – he did not contend at all. Jordan Spieth had a nice start to the week, but again, his ball striking is just terrible right now. His game is basically, it's smoke and mirrors. If his short game is on and his putting is on, he'll contend. Otherwise, he was just awful. And the weather will expose your weaknesses in your swing and in your ball striking if you're not on point. Same thing with Justin Rose. Same thing as he did at the U.S. Open, where it was just a lot of smoke and mirrors. And again, the weather really showed his weaknesses on Sunday, where he shot 8 over. And again, a lot of guys did poorly on Sunday, but you could tell who's playing solid if you're shooting around even par in those conditions versus someone that's 6, 7, 8 over. I mean, that really exposes the flaws in your swing. I guess we'll mention Tiger. I don't know. I don't know why anyone is surprised he missed a cut. He hadn't played for a month. It was horrible conditions on Thursday and Friday. He's a 44-year-old man, and he's playing out there in 50 degrees with like jackets on. I mean, it's just not. I'm not going to make excuses for him. I'm the last person to make excuses for him. But if whoever thought he would contend in this tournament was a fool, because it was never going to add up for him. And I'm beginning to believe more and more like that Masters this year was like his last hurrah, and like, you know, he was deep down, he's just kind of satisfied with that, like being the end of his career. Obviously it's not going to be, because he's going to keep playing. But I think if you asked him right now, like, would he be happy with retiring after just kind of just going through the motions and just winning that major of the Masters earlier this year, I think he would probably say, oh, you know, I'm okay with it. I came back, I won, and that's it. But he just had a horrible 2 days, and I'm not surprised at all. So I guess that's kind of a rundown of some of the major players, and be interested to hear some of Mike's thoughts as well.
All right, let's give it to Mike now. Let's get your surprises and disappointments.
Yeah, that was a good recap by John. I'll give some of my thoughts, because, I mean, we're going to go over mostly the same players, because the big names. Adam Scott, yeah, I had him on my a FanDuel team. I did notice that I somehow managed to sneak into a third-place finish, I think thanks to a Jason Kokrak shooting 3-under in that final round, so good job by him. But Adam Scott, like John said, he'd been playing well. Now, I didn't expect him to win or anything, but, you know, just with the, yeah, with the way the course looked, I was expecting him to at least be in the mix a little bit, and he just came out and he shot like a 78 on the first day and wasn't even close to missing a cut. So terrible job by him. McIlroy, you know, the weird thing is, it's like the second round, and granted he played well in the second round, but like John said, we see this happens all the time. Just go through tournament results, like on the PGA Tour, and just look at guys who missed the cut and look at their like round one and round two, and you'll see stuff like this all the time. Now, look, it was exciting, but like afterwards, and I know he was upset and he was emotional. Now, good for him for showing that, but it's like it turned into this celebration of Rory McIlroy after he missed the cut at Royal Portrush, where he set the course record, I mean, on the old configuration at least, and where he was the hometown guy and where he had won a couple times this season. You know, look, I understand it was a nice moment a little bit just to provide that excitement, you know, but let's be honest. McIlroy had four majors at the end of 2014. He was 25 years old with four majors. I know I keep saying this on every podcast, but it's true. If we had said after that PGA Championship 2014, you know, Rory McIlroy is not going to win another major this decade, it would have been like, you're crazy. But he hasn't. So it's really a time where we should be reflecting and being like, you know, what's happened with him? What changed? What bit of his game, or what is it between the ears that isn't the same anymore? But it turned into this celebration of him, which, you know, we got to be fair. We see stuff like that happen with Tiger Woods, where he has this good round. People are like, oh, well, you know, here comes Tiger Woods again. We're always like, no, we calm down a little bit. So just a bit of a strange reaction to Rory McIlroy there. Regarding Tiger Woods, yeah, John is right on point again. Now, granted, I held out a little bit on writing him off completely until I learned a little bit more about how this course was laid out and such. And once I was seeing that, well, you know, they're saying that it's pretty demanding off the tee compared more so to links courses, I was like, all right, he has no chance. I mean, how many times did he play since the Masters? He didn't play until he played the PGA. He played a Jack's tournament. He played the U.S. He played three times in 3 months heading into this. So that's not going to get it done. And he can tell all the sob stories he wants about, oh, well, you know, I can only play so many times. Look, I'm sure there's some truth to what he said. But listen, we know that Tiger Woods, every statement he's ever made as a professional golfer has been crafted by a PR firm. It's true. You can argue with me and say you hate him, but it's true. We know that. beginning with the Hello World thing in 96, everything he says literally does sound like a PR firm wrote it for him, because they probably did. So I do think he might be exaggerating it a little bit, but like John said, I think he does have this bit of satisfaction of saying, okay, you know what? I came back 11 years after after I had won in the U.S. Open in 08. I came back 11 years later and I won another major when people thought I was done. I've done what I need to do. Now, he probably wants to get like two more wins overall to break Sam Snead's record, although I've mentioned this, and they're doing that ridiculous special on him today, which tonight on Golf Channel, which I will not watch one second of. The Sam Snead record of 82 PGA Tour wins is very much an arbitrary record. Now, if you Google about it, you'll see a lot of articles by just people kissing Tiger's ass in the media saying, well, you know, he really should have the record already. But that's not true. There was no PGA Tour up until the 1970s. And what they did is, in the 1980s, they convened this panel to pick and choose which wins of certain players, let's say Snead, Hogan, etc., Walter Hagen, which of these tournaments should count as PGA Tour wins. Now, the number they came up with is 82, but that doesn't include like the West Virginia Open, which was at the Greenbrier, which always had big names in it. He won seven of those. It doesn't include the North and South Open at Pinehurst, which frankly was maybe as big as the Masters in its day. It doesn't include that for reasons saying that, the prize money wasn't enough, so we don't count it. So, and then if you look at contemporary articles of the 1960s, when Snead like won in Greensboro in 64 as a 52-year-old, there's several articles from the 60s that all reference Snead having won over 100 tournaments. So the number's arbitrary. I don't know why they need to do – well, I do know why they need to do this. It's just to attract more attention. They pulled this same shit with when Tiger was approaching the cuts record held by Byron Nelson, and Sports Illustrated did research and found out that Ben Hogan actually held the cuts record, but the PGA Tour refused to accept that record as being official. And so Tiger broke Nelson's record, but he didn't beat Hogan, but they don't count Hogan's record. So I know I went on a tangent there, but it needed to be said, because you're just hearing way too much crap about Tiger Woods. To get back on point, more disappointments. Let's see. Mark Leishman shooting, not even close to making a cut. He was eight over. So I thought, you know, he's the kind of guy who you think can perform well in these events. Hideki Matsuyama, he still has not recovered from, I think, 2017, where, you know, he was in the driver's seat at the PGA Championship, and it went south, and he hasn't recovered from that. And then Phil Mickelson, look, I guess it's the time to address him, but why is he going on a week-long fast, like 2 weeks before a tournament starts? Any doctor or anyone, and the guy's got a lot of money, would tell you that's crazy. It's going to screw up like your blood sugar numbers and stuff like that, and you're going to have no energy. But he goes on this coffee fast to try to drop 15 pounds in a week. And of course, he comes out and he shoots, what did he shoot in the first round? 76 in the first round, and then follows it up with a 74. So not even close. Granted, look, the guy's going to turn 50 years old next year, so he's done for all intents and purposes. But it's just to see someone with access to like the absolute best experts in fields like that to do something so ridiculous. It makes you shake your head.
Yeah, you should know. I would think you'd know better than that. I mean, I could make this all about me, but the idea that you have to fast in order to lose weight, I think, is preposterous. I mean, it takes a lot more than that. And obviously it didn't work out for him on the course either. So, yeah, I don't know. Phil's generally a decent guy, but he does Mongo stuff. I mean, the gambling scenario, and you got this, and the insider trading, Mike. I mean, the guy, maybe he's not as smart as I thought he was, Mike.
Here's what I would say about Phil. He is a complex character. There are certain aspects about him that I think are phony. I mean, he obviously, yeah, we've seen the insider trading, and I don't want to get into political views about him, but I'll say this, though. He legitimately does give a lot of his time towards signing autographs and looking people in the eye. And you know what? If you give up your time for something, even if you're doing it for the purposes of projecting an image, it's still your time. And isn't that your most valuable thing you have in the end?
It's true. It's true. Very well said. Okay. So let's go down to John, and it is time for a look at the broadcast on NBC, who recently have been doing these open championships. And John, let's get your thoughts on the broadcast.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I first will mention Golf Channel and just an unbelievable job. They literally have you covered from the first shot at 1:30 a.m. Eastern time to the final putt both Thursday and Friday. So you could have gotten up to watch Darren Clark at 1:30 a.m. and then just sat there all night and all day and all afternoon and watched the entire coverage. So in terms of pure hours of coverage, it does not get any better than Golf Channel and NBC for this event. So when they stepped up and got this, when Fox took over the U.S. Open, they lost the U.S. Open, and now they picked up the Open after ESPN dropped it. So just a tremendous job by them with the amount of coverage. As far as NBC goes, we had another dose of Paul Azinger, and I mentioned it to you guys, and I'll say it here. He did say a number of ridiculous things, as always, like we talked about at the U.S. Open with Fox. However, since there's so many more professional announcers on NBC that do a good job, like Gary Koch and Faraday and Malfi, and you know, even I know Dave, you're not a huge fan of Dan Hicks, but you know, he's a professional broadcaster. He's done a number of these, so he definitely helps the cause when it comes to muffling out Azinger's dumb comments, and he certainly had some. Like I mentioned, when he was criticizing Fleetwood for going for the green or going for it when he's on the 14th hole. I mean, dude, he's three shots behind with five holes to go. What do you think he's going to try to lay up? I mean, that was just stupid. But you know, overall, I think NBC they did a great job. Azinger notwithstanding, but again, I think you didn't get as much of like, oh my God, I can't believe what he's saying, because there are so many other good announcers around them, and I think it helps that they have regular coverage throughout the year. Same thing with CBS; they have their same team every week. And you can tell NBC they know what they're doing. I like having Tirico. Honestly, they should get rid of Hicks for Tirico. I mean, Tirico is great at basically almost everything he does. But especially, I remember him doing the opens on ABC and ESPN, and he did a fantastic job with that. And when they bring him in for like the essays, or I think he calls some of the Golf Channel action with Faldo, in between the two stations, and he does a great job. So I think they should replace Hicks with Tirico, but I don't know if that will ever happen. But in any event, compared to Fox, definitely NBC is much better. I would still say CBS gets a little bit of an edge over NBC just because of Nance and Faldo, but definitely a quality broadcast, that's for sure. They have the top tracer thing that all of them have now, which is a huge help. And there's really no one on there, like, other than I would say Azinger. Obviously, we've talked about him, but no one on there that like really annoys you in terms of like when they're trying to make points or whatever. So I would say a quality broadcast overall.
Yeah, and I agree with a lot of that. I think that was a great point you made, John, about how Azinger, surrounded by a lot of good, competent broadcasters, really minimizes his impact on the broadcast, and that is a good thing. So let's go to Mike and let's get your thoughts on the broadcast.
Yeah, you have to hand it to them. I mean, literally showing the entire event on Thursday and Friday, it's incredible, really, that they do that. I know on Thursday they made it a point that They showed at least one shot from every golfer in the field, so good job there. I guess I'll talk about the, because even though it's not the TV coverage, talk about the online coverage a little bit. One thing I had a problem with, and I don't think it was my internet at all, was that the stream like kept dying. Well, it's not like it was dying like every couple of minutes, but if you like watched it for like 15, 20 minutes, the screen would go black and you'd have to like restart it. So I thought that was a little weird. I'll say this, the Open Championship app leaves a lot to be desired. Like there's no shot tracer or anything like that. I just feel like the navigation is cumbersome. So that could definitely be much improved. Definitely agree with what John said about how Azinger just not being good. Like the effect is just muted a bit because I almost feel like with the NBC group, he almost tries to take a back step a little bit, and he just throws it around to Koch and Faraday and Maltby. So that really helps minimize the effect. Now, the thing that kind of gets you with it a little bit is that you do have Tirico and Faldo doing stuff in the off-peak hours, and you're just thinking, you're like, man, if they could just get Tirico and Faldo in there, with Maltby, Koch, and Faraday, it would just be such a great broadcast. But obviously, that can never happen. You know, Faldo has the Golf Channel contract, and he's got the CBS contract, so he's not going to be on taking the lead announcer role at NBC. There was, I thought there was one pretty weird moment, though. It was J.B. Holmes, like, hit a shot. I think it was J.B. Holmes. It might not have been, though. But he hit a shot, like, way less, and I tweeted about this. And he yells four, and, like, everyone's like, oh, like, Azinger says, going out, that's going left. I think it was Maltby was like, that's going left. And then for whatever reason, Dan Hicks just, like, screamed out. He just goes, shouting. He just, like, screamed over everyone. And I'm like, wait, what the hell just happened? So I thought that was a little bit weird. Any other moments? Well, there was a thing where Azinger said that Lowry had won the Irish Open in 2009 at Royal Portrush, but it was not at Royal Portrush. So I know I'm being a little bit of a funhouse with that, but, you know, he should – listen, you've got a million producers. There should be someone able to scream that into his ear. Or I'm sure there's some button he can press, like if he's unsure about something, ask for an answer. But even though there are some warts, I mean, just the amount of live coverage they give you, just because of that, you know, you really are hard-pressed to complain about a lot with the NBC Golf Channel coverage of the Open Championship.
Yep, pretty good stuff. I mean, I think if I'm going to be a little picky, maybe the camera work wasn't so great because they were kind of missing things from what I saw. I don't know if you guys agree, but did you catch Mike, for example, when Fleetwood had a shot and it was like really way down the, you know, near the green, and the camera was focused on, I think it was on Lowry's ball instead, didn't realize that the ball was off to the left, and then they moved the camera over to the left to see the ball. Did you find the camera work to be decent enough?
You know, there were a couple moments, now that you mentioned that, like I think maybe they were using a drone or something on a wire at times, and I like saw like the camera was like shaking, and I was starting to get a little bit like sick watching the TV. It's like, what are they doing? But on Sunday, though, I think that happened during like the height of the rain and the wind. So in conditions like that, you do have to give them a little bit of a pass. But, yeah, there were a couple instances where it could have been better.
Okay, yeah, and it was raining really hard during that final round for 10 minutes. It was really a wild ride, and that was part of the fun of that round. But they did get through it, so that I do. You're right, it's not easy to broadcast an event through that, play through an event through that, all the change, the clothes changing that everybody had to do, put on extra pairs of pants and raincoats and such. So you're right, it was definitely not a comfortable situation anyway. So all right, very good. So that is going to wrap it up for the Open coverage. Let's look ahead to the rest of the schedule, and what's left is You're right, Mike. You're right, John. There aren't any more majors, so this is definitely an unusual spot this year because this will be the first year we don't have an August major with the PGA getting moved to May. So instead, what we can do is we can focus on the playoff, and we begin with the hot and swampy, sweaty FedEx event. Let's go to John first and talk about that a little bit, and then we'll go to Mike and get a rundown of what's to come with the FedEx playoff. But John, I'll give it to you first.
Yeah, so we have two more weeks before the FedEx Cup playoffs start. We have the aforementioned Memphis Swamp Ass Open this week. I still don't know why they made this arrangement in the schedule. You do have some top players playing, obviously, because let's be honest, it's a no cut event. There's only 65 players or so, so it's an easy way to pick up some cash and some world ranking points too, especially for some of the mid-level guys or like, you know, the top, you know, 30 to 40 guys. But there are some big names that aren't playing in this, and I'm not surprised. And I would not be surprised at all to see like Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson and a lot of these guys just kind of mail it in this week, honestly. So if I was doing like FanDuel this week, I'd take guys like Bryson DeChambeau and like Xander Schauffele, those kind of guys who didn't really contend at the Open Championship and would kind of be, you know, really up to win like a World Golf Championship event. Those would be my kind of picks for this event. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. The tour put all their eggs in this basket, and we'll see where it goes. I mean, I don't see how they actually haven't come out yet with a schedule for 2020, which is interesting because the Olympics are going to be next year too, and obviously golf is back on the Olympic sports, and they're going to have to fit that into the schedule. So maybe this tournament will get moved around again to another date on the calendar, but it's going to be, you know, we'll see how the top players do in Memphis this week. It's actually a pretty interesting course, TPC of Southwind. I remember watching, you know, just the old tournament in June that used to be played before the U.S. Open, and it was never a great field, but it's definitely an interesting course. You have some water in play on the back nine, so I mean, it could be an interesting event. It's just the fact that they're having a quote World Golf Championship event the week after a major is just kind of, it just doesn't feel right to me. Like maybe if you did the week before a major, I could see it because you're building up to it. Just the week after, it just does not make any sense. But so you have that event next week, and then you also have an opposite field event for all the players that have not qualified for the World Golf Championships in Reno. And this is actually a really fun tournament as the Stableford scoring. And for those who don't know what that means, you know, on a normal golf leaderboard, you know, guys are minus one, minus two, minus three to par, or plus one, plus two, plus three, whatever. A Stableford scoring is a points scoring system. So, for example, like if you birdie a hole, you get 2 points. If you par a hole, I believe you get 1 point or 0 points. I'd have to look up the exact scoring. Eagle, I think you get 5 points. Double eagle, you get like 8 points. So all the scores are going to be plus. So if you're like plus 40, that means you have 40 points. So it's a very interesting scoring system. They used to do this this would be a tournament in Colorado called the International. I remember watching that as a kid. It was actually a pretty wild event, of course, way up in the mountains, and it just a bizarre, you'd have some bizarre finishes, guys holing out on par fives for the eagle. I don't know why it was like left off the FedEx Cup when they started the new schedule. It was one of the tournaments that got eliminated. I'm not quite sure why. That was always a fun event. But this tournament in Reno, Nevada, has taken over that scoring system. And it's actually, since the World Golf Championship event only has 65 players, like I mentioned, it's not a bad field, and it's going to be on, like, nighttime, primetime golf, which I love. So it's going to be on from, like, 7 to 10 or 6 to 9. I'll definitely get into that on the weekend. So that's a fun event to watch. And then the next week, you have the Wyndham Championship, which is the final full field event before the FedEx Cup playoffs. And then you have the three FedEx Cup playoff events, down from four from last year. They got rid of the event in Boston. And we'll see what happens. Now, I don't know whether they're doing maybe Mike knows if this is implemented for this year. Are they doing where the leader after the second event is like minus 10 or something, and they're doing it to strokes to start or something? I feel like they're doing that for this year, and it's just the stupidest idea ever. You know, I'll definitely be more into the FedEx Cup this year since it is in August, but I just hate that that's going to be the how you decide it. So the PGA Tour voted on a policy where, okay, so after the second playoff event, heading into the Tour Championship, the leader of the FedEx Cup, whoever it is going to start at like minus 10 to par, and then they're going to start the tournament like that. And then after that, it's going to be like minus 9, minus 8, whatever, down to I have no idea what those 30th guy is going to be, plus whatever. And then they're just going to play the tournament like that, which is just ridiculous, in my opinion. I guess they're just trying to make it so everyone has a chance to win the $10 million prize. But I feel like if you haven't played well the whole season, you shouldn't really have a chance to win the whole prize. Like, okay, you qualify for the Tour Championship. Great, good for you. You can have a good season, but you shouldn't be eligible to win like the top $10 million prize as the season champion instead of some like bogus system where if you shoot like, you know, 20 under for four rounds, you can win. But anyway, that's just kind of my rant on it. But it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah. I'm going to start learning about the system myself as we get into the next few weeks. And Mike, if you look at the road ahead, there's certainly a little juice left over. Any other thoughts as far as the remaining schedule for the year leading into the FedEx Cup, Mike?
Well, yeah, because John was talking about it, they are implementing that format for this year. Got it right in front of me. The number one seed will be starting at 10 under. The second seed is at 8 under. The third seed at 7 under. So on down to the fifth seed at minus 5. Seed 6 through 10 will begin at minus 4. Seeds 11 through 15 will begin at minus 3. And so on down to the seeds 26 to 30, who will start at even par. I mean, this just has shit show written all over it. Because, like, I'm not sure. So, wait. So, if someone shoots the best score through the tournament, they're not going to win. And then the person who doesn't shoot the best score because they got an arbitrary starting point is going to get an official win and world ranking points because of this? I mean, it makes absolutely no sense. Like, this is just going to blow up in their face. I mean, I know what they're trying to do, but it's dumb. Just stop trying to reinvent the wheel. Getting off topic, Vid, because you sent this text to both of us about the Yankees-Twins over for tonight. The over has hit. It is 8-6 Twins currently. So, good job. I did take some action on that. You know, I did a little research, and the average temperature in Memphis in July, average high temperature, is 92 degrees. And adding to that, the average dew point is 70. Now, if you want a little more information about what that would mean, a dew point of 70 degrees or above is considered, like, oppressively humid. So, I mean, how they weren't looking at this the week after the British Open, for God's sake, and being like, you know what? I understand that FedEx pushed for it, but wasn't there someone representing FedEx who had something resembling a brain in his head instead of a brick who would have been told this information and be like, you know what? Let's find another week to slot this in somewhere. This isn't a good idea. I mean, I don't understand it. Now, John's right. The course itself, it actually can be pretty challenging. You know, architecturally, it's not anything like magnificent. But in terms for challenging tournament pros, it is quite good. So, you know, the course itself might be pretty good. But, you know, the thing is, though, in late July, it might be so humid and it might affect the conditions so much that it might soften it out to the point where it'll play pretty easy. I don't know. We'll have to see. I do agree about the Barracuda Championship. Well, you know, with the Stableford format and this course up in the mountains in Reno, and the fact that it's on late or on during prime time, I always find myself watching it. So I'll definitely be into that. Greensboro Sedgefield is an old Donald Ross design, so there's some interesting holes there. Definitely worth a bit of your attention. And then, yeah, this FedEx Cup playoff. Well, the event in Boston, they're not doing it this year, but what they've been, what they're going to do is, apparently they're going to the Northern Trust, which is, it's now called, it's going to alternate between a New York City area course 1 year and then the TPC Boston the next year, which to me kind of seems weird. Like, all right, you figure that New York and Boston are two of the biggest markets in the country, so now you're only going to go to one every other year instead of having one in each every year. That seems a little bit weird to me. The BMW Championship is going to be at Medina. So obviously we've seen majors there. We've seen Ryder Cups there, you know, the miracle at Medina. Obviously that great comeback by the Europeans in 2012. So that should be interesting. And then the Tour Championship, which is just going to be, that's just going to be silly to watch. But who knows? Maybe it'll produce an exciting result. But definitely a little, it's definitely going to be a little bit weird. And I got to look up something. What week is the President's Cup going to be? Let me see here. Stupid ass.
I think it's in December.
Yeah, they don't even have it on this. So, yeah, it's got to be pretty late. But the President's Cup is at Royal Melbourne in Australia this year. And that's considered one of the greatest courses in the world. It was designed by Alistair McKenzie, who did Augusta. And unlike Augusta, it hasn't been changed as radically. So one of the great courses in the world. So the President's Cup will definitely be a must-watch because of the venue.
Very good, Mike. And shout out to covers.com for that information about the over-under tonight with the Twins game. You just had a feeling there were going to be a lot of runs with this series. The Twins have been involved in many high-scoring games. It goes back to the weekend series with the A's, and they scored a ton of runs. There was like the last game was, I believe, 7-6. So I can't imagine it going any differently with the Yankees in town. It's going to be some finish. And I don't even know. You can see the score there, Mike. It's 8-6 in the seventh inning. I couldn't even tell you who wins the game. Actually, to be fair, we all know who's going to win this game, right, guys? I mean, Twins against the Yankees. I mean, that's – who would ever bet the Twins in that spot? But in general terms, yeah, that's a good spot. So I'm glad that you got a bink out of that, Mike. Very good stuff. So, all right. Let's see. I think that's it. I guess we could do potpourri if you want. John, is there anything else you want to talk about tonight?
I don't know. We pretty much covered, I think, everything there is to cover with golf. Mm-hmm. Kind of exciting that you're getting to see some training camps start up.
Yep.
NFL season will be here before college football too will be here before you know it. So, I don't know. How do we feel about doing like a final, like golf recap show after the Tour Championship next month? Because we'll still be in August. I don't know. It could be kind of fun to rant on that ridiculous FedEx Cup system and how it's so arbitrary. And Mike is absolutely right. Like, okay, someone might win just because it was just some arbitrary number that they start off with. It's just going to be so stupid. I could see, like, I just looked at the FedEx Cup standings right now, and I was looking at the top 30, because the top 30 qualify for the Tour Championship, and obviously it's going to change between now and then, but let's just say the number 30 guy right now is Lucas Glover, and so you're saying he's going to start 10 shots off the lead. So what if he shoots, like, I don't know, 18 under the 3 days, but the number one player, Brooks Koepka, shoots 9 under for the four rounds, but he still wins because he started with the 10 shot advantage. There's just so many bad things that are going to happen with that, and I have no idea what they're doing. Just play the tournament as usual, and if the guy is 30th. Good for him. He had a good season. He made the Tour Championship. That doesn't mean he's eligible to win the FedEx Cup. They're trying to make it like all other sports where anyone can win in the playoffs. Like, okay, like, I get it, but no, like, he doesn't have a win. The guy doesn't have a win all year and has a few top tens. There's no way that he should be able to win the overall season championship. It's just so stupid. I just don't understand it. I'm ranting again about that, but I just don't get it.
That is,
but in any event, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to some football. We'll have to do our college football show, Dave, and then I'll be down for a you know, a kind of a PGA Tour season recap after the championship.
I like it. I like it. I we're still on for that, John. It should be a good show. And now that I know about this ridiculous format, I mean, now we have to do a show because that's going to be, like you said, it's going to be a real clown car to talk about. So I'm with you, John. All right, so let's go to Mike and get any other potpourri. Anything else you want to talk about? Even doesn't have to be golf, but you can anything that you had on your mind for the moment.
I guess just to touch on golf because it was the last major of the decade, which, you know, it. I mean, obviously I knew, but it like hit me once Lowry had the tournament pretty much won. He had a 6-shot lead 3 holes to go. Once like that happened, it hit me that this is the last major of the decade. And I just started trying to reflect on it and go through each one. And I was actually able to remember going through year by year. Okay, let's go 2010 Masters. And then I was able to remember every single winner, believe it or not, which I don't know. I mean, if you put me on like a game show and made me do it, I'd probably forget a few, but, it was almost like a kind of a sad moment, just realizing that a decade of golf has gone by and, you know, just the passage of time and all that stuff. But just to go on that theme, so McIlroy won 4 majors and Koepka won 4 majors. They were tied for the most. Spieth won 3. And then Phil Mickelson, Bubba Watson, and Martin Keimer won 2 each. And then after that, those are the only multiple major winners. And one thing I did find a little interesting is that if you look at those multiple major winners, when Rory won his 4th major of the decade at that 2014 PGA Championship, Phil, Bubba, and Martin Keimer had each gotten to 2 majors each also. But Spieth and Koepka at that time had 0 majors. And then of the last 20 majors of the decade, Koepka and Spieth won 7 of them. So that's a pretty good run there between 2 players. Now, going into the next decade, if you put a gun to my head, who's of those players who would win the most? I'd probably say Koepka at this point. McIlroy's just, I don't know, stuff has fallen off from him. His putting's always been a little bit spotty. It just seems to be more inconsistent now. So who knows? But a decade of major golf. And I'll give you guys one thing. If you could have made a bet in 2009, Tiger Woods under 1.5 majors for the 2010s, like, what, you would have gotten some crazy odds. I mean, you'd be swimming in money right now if you'd taken that bet. I mean, Grant, I don't think any of us would have done it, but it would have been a pretty good bet to make. And, yeah, I guess a show after the Tour Championship and the clown car that's going to be, you know, it'd be fun because we can get on some college football stuff, some NFL stuff coming up. So, really, it'd be a lot of different things to discuss. So, I mean, I will have begun law school by that time, but I can always squeeze in a couple hours to talk to you guys. So, yeah, I think that's a good idea. There'll definitely be a number of things we can go over.
Yeah. Let me ask you a quick question off the top of your head, see if you can get a gauge for this. Who do you think has a hotter seat right now? Is it Clay Helton, Brian Kelly, or is it Jim Harbaugh? Of the three, who do you think is the hottest of the seats?
Oh, geez, Dave, that's a tough one.
It's a good one, right?
I'm going to say Clay Helton for sure out of those three. I mean, Harbaugh, like, he's been disappointing, but he's winning 10 games every year. Like, I don't see how he's going to be. If he wins another 10 games, okay, maybe if they lose to Ohio State again, he'd be in trouble. But, I mean, they have a pretty easy schedule this year for the most part. They could be a playoff contender this year, Michigan. I definitely think it's Clay Helton. I mean, he's, you know, he could be fired by midseason if they don't get off to a good start, honestly. Brian Kelly, I mean, he just took them to the playoff. I don't think his job is in danger at all. I'll give you another one for that mix. How about Willie Taggart at Florida State?
Oh,
he's
got
to be
one.
Thin ice. I mean, they have to have a good year or else he's going to be in big trouble.
That's a good call, John. Wow, that's fantastic. That's a terrific point. I mean, it just looked like their games were getting non-competitive towards the end last year. I mean, that was rough. That was rough. I know they lost DeAndre Francois, but that was rough. So, so Mike, if you could assess it, I guess Brian Kelly's not a good candidate for this. So, of the other three, who do you think would be the hottest of the seats?
I mean, it's got to be Clay Helton, right? Because doesn't USC at some point have to like be like, all right, we're USC, let's get our shit together and bring in someone reputable who like isn't an alcoholic? Although, you know, it's amazing. It's like Alabama is serving as this failed USC head coach rehabilitation program, but then, you know, they seem to fall off the wagon after they leave there too. But John made a good point. It could be Willie Taggart, because how Florida State has gone from what they were to, I mean, just a shit show they were last year. You have a feeling that things could be getting shaken up there in Florida with how things have gone.
Yeah, now, and I'm going to agree with both of you guys with Helton. I mean, there's no question. I mean, but Taggart is a really, 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 really good choice. And as to who gets fired first, I mean, that's going to be a fight to the finish. The USC schedule to start the year is really tough. Like, they have Fresno State at home to start. Fresno State's a tough team. Then they play Stanford. They're at BYU against Utah. They're fortunate they're at home for that one. But then they're at Washington and at Notre Dame. I mean, that is hard. I don't know how. I mean, they would be tough for a good team to come out of that with three wins. But USC, I don't know. Yeah, that's going to be tough. So,
yeah, Dave, your talk about USC, it reminds me of, I'm just thinking of how they hired Cliff Kingsbury to be the offensive coordinator. And then somehow the Arizona Cardinals decided that they wanted to make him their head coach. I just, it still boggles my mind. His gimmick Big 12 offense, they're gonna bring it to the NFL, and it's just gonna be. I can't wait to see it because it's gonna be so bad. It's gonna be just a complete shit show. But yeah. So who did USC end up with as their offensive coordinator? I want to say
Graham Harrell.
I thought it was someone. Okay,
yeah.
Nice. So he's from kind of the same. It's like he's like Kingsbury light, basically.
Yeah.
Who he is. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that could work out. I mean, JT Daniels is still a quarterback, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I mean, you got to expect improvement in his second year, I guess. You got to be positive to start the season, and every fan's got to be positive. I mean, my team had the worst defense in the history of college football last year, and I at least can say, oh, hey, maybe we'll win three this year, and that's me being positive. But so you got to be positive to start the season.
Well, I mean, I think the positivity certainly grows too if they can win that opener against Fresno State, and then you know Stanford. While it's not an easy opponent, they're at home, and they've probably got some turnover themselves to deal with. So, no, I think that, you know, when the season begins, you never really know exactly where anyone's going to go. So it'll be an intriguing first month, no doubt. What was the other thing I was going to bring up? Let me see. Can't think of it off the top of my head, but excuse me. So let me I guess that's it. But let's get to final thoughts in that case, and we'll definitely talk more college football too coming up next month. We'll get Ron in the mix for that too. But final thoughts, Mike. You did have a great point about how this is the last major, and I didn't even really realize that until you brought it up on Sunday. It's definitely been a good year of golf. I mean, it's been probably, I don't think the word is wide open, because you mentioned how like two guys at seven of the 20 majors, but it's been a fun year, and I think golf has changed. I don't know if you'd agree with this, but it seems like golf has changed a lot in those 10 years. And just the perspective of like who's the best and who was the best going into the decade. I mean, it's really crazy how things have moved along. So, Mike, I'll give it to you first for the final thoughts.
Yeah, well, touching on what you just said, golf has produced a lot of young talent, and it's led to a lot more parity at the top. You know, than we had the previous day. Now, granted, we know how dominant Tiger Woods was. I mean, he won, how many majors did he win in the 2000s? 12? Yeah, because he won 97, 99, and then 2019. So he must have won 12 majors in that decade alone, which is incredible. But we've said this on this program that if you look at, look, don't take anything away from like his early run, but when you look at like his later results, I mean, beating the likes of Rocco Mediate and players like that, I mean, and Chris DeMarco a couple times. Golf, we had Phil, but Phil was always inconsistent, even at his best. After the top two, I mean, there was really kind of a, we really went through like 10 years of it being like pretty thin at the top, but now the ranks have been replenished. And I think you can see that with, just look at some of the players who only have won one major in this past decade or one major total for their careers. I mean, Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, Adam Scott, I think he's a little bit passed out, but like Louis Oosthuizen won one major and he has, two or three playoff losses and four or five second place finishes. So you just see guys like that. I mean, there's really just, there's so much talent at the top. And, you know, we were able to see, you know, a couple great runs, Rory winning the two majors in a row in 2014 and winning four majors in four seasons. And then Spieth having that great 2015 season. And then Brooks Koepka, you know, with the magic that he showed with that winning three majors over seven starts. So we were able to see some dominant runs, granted over pretty short time frames, but we're in a good spot going forward. And, you know, we've seen some of these young guys come out on tour. Matthew Wolf hits the ball a mile. He's got that very unorthodox swing, so we'll see how that holds up. But he does seem to have all the talent in the world. So I think golf is in a good place, and it should be a very interesting next decade in golf.
Yeah, I think it sets up for another great decade in golf as well. This is certainly an exciting time. Now let's go to John and get his final thoughts.
Yeah, I won't make any predictions on where things will be in 2029 at the end of the Open Championship, because who the hell knows? But I completely agree with the point that in terms of the depth of the quality of players, you can't compare today to say 2009. You know, you had Tiger and Vijay were kind of your two main guys, and Elves had his moments here and there, and Mickelson. But for the most part, there was only a few guys that could really win majors, and that's why you saw the likes of, you know, Ben Curtis and Y.E. Yang and Sean McKeel and Michael Campbell, like, just pop out of nowhere and win majors, and you never hear from him again. Like, I was saying to you guys the other day, I can't remember, like, the last absolute no-name major winner, and, like, in the last decade. So, you know, I guess you could say, you guys were saying Keegan Bradley, but even he, it's like, he's on tour every year. He, like, doesn't lose his tour card, and he's got four or five wins. I mean, that's your most obscure major winner of the decade. I mean, it's been a pretty good decade, so... the quality of play and the quality of players now on the PGA Tour, it's really unmatched. And it really sets up for some exciting tournaments. And, you know, hopefully it'll keep it going. And golf is, I think it's in a great place. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see when kind of Tiger rides into the sunset eventually, whether his fans will stay. And that'll be the big question of the next decade, whether they're just Tiger fans or they're going to continue to be golf fans, and we'll have to see the answer to that. But it's been a fun year, and you know, wish there had been a little more drama in some of the last two majors, but hey, you can't win them all. And we certainly enjoyed it for what it was, and we'll look forward to coming back again and in a month to recap the season, and certainly we'll be counting down the clock to the Masters at that point.
Yeah, the 2020 Masters, just to think of that, just in concept is just wild. It's like, I don't think of the Masters in the year 2020 in the same same universe, but it's going to happen in a few months, so it's going to be wild. So this has been a really great decade of doing golf shows, and when I started doing these recaps with you guys, you know, I was looking, certainly had high hopes, but this has certainly even exceeded my expectations. You guys have done a tremendous job, and I want to thank you for being there to do that with me all this time. It's been a lot of fun, and we're not done. We got one more golf show for this year, when we do the PGA Tour recap and review. We'll talk about that just wacky tour championship and a lot more. So, guys, this has been fun. Thank you so much. And my continued and good success to you as you enter law school as well. I do want to make that note of that, Mike. Good job out of you getting accepted. We're really happy for you. We're rooting for you, too.
Well, thanks a lot. I will say I do have to take this much more seriously than I took my undergraduate career. But I think with age comes maturity. So, I'm not concerned about that. I'll put in the effort.
All right. Sounds good. And John, just before we go, I mean, how has everything been going with your I guess you could call it your Wednesday group doing the golf scenario?
Oh yeah, my Wednesday league. Yeah, my team. I guess you could say I play with another person. Like we're partners, and we're in fourth place, and we have like 7 weeks left. So, hoping to make one final push throughout for the remainder of the season. So it's a lot of fun, and something to do basically, and just not have to just sit in it. Something to do in the summer basically after work, which is nice. So still in contention, and. By our next month, our show, I'll have an idea of where we're going to finish for the season. So it's pretty exciting. I'm definitely looking forward to the remainder of the golf season.
Oh, that'd be fun. Good luck, John. And guys, thanks again. Have a good weekend, and we'll be back in a month. Take care, everybody.
All right, Dave.
Take care, guys.
All right, fellas. That's our show. That's John. That's Mike, and this is Dave. Thank you very much, everybody. We hope you enjoyed this Open Championship recap and our last golf major recap of the decade. That's been fun. 10 years of DidCow, right? Speaking of which, we've got a 10 years of DidCow special coming up, the top 5 DidCow episodes of 2015. That's coming up in just a couple days. Then we've got a bonus show for you tomorrow. We'll see you next time. So